Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Ann Ball, and Pete Musto. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
American space company SpaceX has successfully launched its large Falcon Heavy rocket on a flight to deploy 24 satellites. The rocket lifted off early Tuesday morning from Florida's Kennedy Space Center. The Falcon Heavy is considered the world's most powerful operating rocket. It was the third successful flight of a Falcon Heavy rocket. The U.S. Department of Defense ordered the current mission. The satellites will be used for experiments involving several U.S. government agencies, as well as some university projects. SpaceX chief Elon Musk said Tuesday's mission was the company's toughest rocket launch ever. It required four separate upper stage engine firings. The satellites also needed to be placed in three different orbits. The process was expected to take about 6 hours. SpaceX uses reusable rockets to reduce the cost of space travel for its customers. These include government and military agencies, the U.S. space agency NASA, and private companies. Several minutes after liftoff, the Falcon Heavy's two side boosters returned safely to Earth and landed at Florida's Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. The center booster was supposed to land on a special platform in the Atlantic Ocean, but did not reach its target. SpaceX said the landing failure of the center booster was not unexpected because of the difficult nature of the mission. "It was a long shot," SpaceX's Musk said on Twitter. In addition to the satellites, the Falcon Heavy carried an atomic clock built by NASA, a solar sail project, and even human ashes. The Deep Space Atomic Clock is a technology experiment aimed at giving spacecraft self-flying abilities in the future. The Solar Sail Project was led by the U.S.-based Planetary Society. The goal of the group's Light Sail is to become the first orbiting spacecraft to be powered completely by sunlight. The head of the Planetary Society is scientist and television star Bill Nye, who praised SpaceX for its cooperation. "Hey, Elon Musk, thanks for the ride," he tweeted. Among the human ashes on the flight were some belonging to astronaut Bill Pogue, who flew on NASA's first space station, Skylab, in the 1970s. Pogue died in 2014. The Falcon Heavy is the most powerful rocket in use today. Each first stage booster has 9 engines, for a total of 27 firing at the same time during liftoff. SpaceX says the rocket has the ability to lift nearly 64 metric tons into orbit. Only NASA's Saturn V rocket, which took U.S. astronauts to the moon, had the ability to carry more into space. I'm Brian Lynn.
West Virginia has long been known as an important coal-producing state in the eastern United States. But the coal business is slowing. Many mines are closing, leaving their workers without a job. James Cyphers was one of the workers. Today, he is happy to be working above ground, keeping bees. Bees make honey in their homes, known as hives, and beekeepers make money selling that honey. After leaving the military, Cyphers worked as a builder and later as a coal miner. Standing by his hives on a rural farm near Beckley, West Virginia, Cyphers wears a hat and covering around his head to protect him from bee stings.
See, here's the queen. See how much bigger she is?
He no longer needs the hard hat he wore during his 16 years in the coal mines. Cyphers loves being outside. He has come to respect and value the honeybees he raises. He says, being a beekeeper is the best job he has ever had.
A lot of times underground, you're working in water and dark conditions, and at times it's miserable. This is not miserable. This is a really enjoyable job. I'm paying off a lot of my bills that we've had in the past that's built up over the years, and able to do things for my grandbabies and my family.
Cyphers found his current job through the Appalachian Beekeeping Collective. The nonprofit program teaches people how to become beekeepers, including workers who have lost their jobs and other low-earning West Virginians seeking extra money. After a free 5-week class, the new beekeepers receive bees, hives, and supplies they need to get started. Expert beekeeper Mark Lilly teaches at the Appalachian Beekeeping Collective. He says that during his travels around the state, he has seen people without hope. But the beekeeping program, he says, can help a family make an additional $3,000 to $5,000 a year. Beekeeper Mike Davis says keeping bees gives him something to look forward to each day.
The bees are just not only calming, it's just like similar to dogs that other people have. I have that same affection for my bees.
Davis adds that southern West Virginia is a great place to raise bees and harvest honey. The many different plants and flowers found in the state helps the bees make tasty honey. They take a substance called nectar from the plants and then use it to make honey in their hives. Terry Giles is with Appalachian Headwaters, which runs the Beekeeping Collective.
I look here and I see what used to be a thriving railroad community has turned into a community with not a lot of options. This beekeeping collective that we are sponsoring is giving people options, but better yet, it's giving people hope for the future.
I'm Ann Ball.
At a comedy night at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland, Members of the school's stand-up comedy club bring lots of laughter to their classmates. They give funny speeches, tell jokes, and make humorous body movements. These college student comedians may feel unsure of themselves at first, but the experience is highly enjoyable. Their humor entertains and helps ease the stress of crowds of busy young people. Yet club member Ariella Shua says comedy is serious work. The students write all their own material. Then, in weekly club meetings, they try out that material. Whoever is reading, we read all of the material, and then we would go joke by joke and see what works and what doesn't, Shua told VOA. So it starts as an individual project for yourself and becomes a group effort. Shua joined the club last year. She says she has become a better observer of what is going on around her ever since. She says she does not go anywhere without bringing something on which she can take notes. Whenever I just have a thought in my head that seems like, oh, this is strange, or when I see something or overhear someone saying something in the library, I just write it down, Shua explained. Later, when I'm trying to write my own set, I go walk through that to see if there is anything in there that I can use. Every school wants their students to perform as best they can in their studies. But colleges and universities across the United States urge their students to explore their abilities and develop interests beyond their field of study. Joining an on-campus club is a good way to do that. Comedy Club President Nicholas Scandura finds that writing is one of the many skills he has developed since joining the club. Writing jokes is really fun, he said. It takes a lot of critical thinking. The club gives its members a sense of community. When they meet, they share funny experiences, tell jokes, and laugh. It's just a nice, relaxing break, Scandura said. Over the past 10 years, stand-up comedy clubs have become common on college campuses in America. He said now everyone wants to do it because the culture of stand-up has gotten a lot of media attention and become more popular. Last year, Harry Cooperstein joined the club and discovered it was a natural fit. Noticing the funny qualities of different situations improved his way of looking at the world. Becoming an active member also helped him work on the future skills he will need as a medical doctor. Talking to patients as a doctor. I think that having jokes ready to go might help smooth these interactions and make you a better public speaker, he said. Club member Alex Heckscher Gomez studies computer science. He thanks the club for helping him develop his own style and learn some secrets of writing good comedy. Not always tell the truth. Sometimes it's funny to go after your imagination, he said. Also, don't always go with your first idea. I definitely thought some things that I said were funny and then looked back. And where I got to with the joke was a lot funnier than when I started. Despite the group meetings, rewrites, and rehearsals, some ideas just are not funny. Club member Benjamin Montegudo said performing in front of a group of students does not mean comedians will not receive strong criticism. Last year, they came up with an idea to keep the audience involved and get their opinions. We called it Tomato Show, where if you were performing very badly on stage, we just let the audience throw tomatoes at us to kind of roll with the joke, he said. So we spent our entire budget on a big box of foam tomatoes. There were 200 to 300 of them. We gave them to the audience, and it was the best show ever. I'm Pete Musto.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We begin the story of America's 37th president.
I, Richard Billhouse Nixon, do solemnly swear
that you will faithfully execute the office.
That I will faithfully execute the office
of President of the United States.
Of President of the United States.
Richard Nixon was sworn into office on January 20th, 1969. Nixon began his presidency at a difficult time. American forces, allied with the Army of South Vietnam, were continuing to fight against the communist forces of North Vietnam. Thousands of soldiers and civilians were dying. The Americans and South Vietnamese were making little progress, and there were anti-war demonstrations in the United States. There were also demonstrations against racial injustice. The issues that divided the nation also divided families and friends. At the same time, fighting the war meant there was less government money available to fight social problems. The last president, Lyndon Johnson, had proposed new legislation to help poor people and minorities. In some cases, Congress approved less money than he had requested. In other cases, lawmakers did not approve any money at all. The new president seemed well prepared to deal with the difficulties of being president. He was known for his ability to fight, to lose, and to keep trying. Richard Nixon was born in California. His family was poor. When he was about 10 years old, he harvested vegetables to help earn money for his family. He earned the money that he needed to go to college. Then he decided to study law. He was among the top students in his class. During World War II, Nixon served in the Navy in the Pacific. When he came home, he ran for a seat in Congress and won. As a member of the House of Representatives, Nixon became known for his part in the Alger Hiss case.
I am holding in my hand a microfilm of very highly confidential secret State Department documents. These documents were fed out of the State Department over 10 years ago by communists who were employees of that department and who were interested in seeing if these documents were sent to the Soviet Union, where the interests of the Soviet Union happened to be in conflict with those of the United States.
Alger Hiss was a former official in the State Department. He had been accused of helping to provide secret information to the Soviet Union. He denied the accusations. Nixon demanded a congressional investigation. Other members of the House thought the issue should be dropped. But Nixon succeeded and led the investigation. While never convicted of espionage, Hiss was tried and found guilty of lying to a grand jury that investigated the case. He was sentenced to prison. Some Americans disliked Richard Nixon for the way he treated people during the investigation. They felt that some of his attacks were unfair. At that time, fear of communism was very strong. Critics thought he was using the situation for his own gain to improve his political future. In 1950, Richard Nixon ran for the Senate. Nixon, a Republican, competed against Democrat Helen Gahagan Douglas, a former actress and three-time California congresswoman. During the often bitter campaign, he accused her of not recognizing the threat of communism in America. He also said that Douglas was pink right down to her underwear, a reference to her being sympathetic to communism. In response, Congresswoman Douglas gave Nixon a nickname he would never completely lose, Tricky Dick. Nixon won the election. Two years later, in 1952, the Republican Party chose him as its candidate for vice president. The candidate for president was Dwight Eisenhower. Eisenhower and Nixon easily defeated the Democratic Party candidates, Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson and Alabama Senator John Sparkman. They won again in 1956. During his 8 years as vice president, Nixon visited 60 countries. He faced violent protests during a visit to South America in 1958. The following year, he visited the Soviet Union. He and Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev had what became known as the Kitchen Debate. It took place in Moscow as they visited a model of a kitchen that might be found in an American house.
Давайте так. Телевидение, конечно, можно, но телевидение можно выступать, никого здесь нет, а потом это положите на склад.
The debate was about world peace. Nixon at one point told Khrushchev that he did not know everything, but there were light moments as well.
Не уступает.
My name is Montel. Our minor can match American lawyer.
Адвокату.
No question about that.
Вы адвокат капитализма, я адвокат коммунизма. Вот давайте мы посоревнуемся.
All that I can say from the way you talk and the way you dominate the conversation, you would have made a good lawyer yourself.
In 1960, Nixon accepted the Republican nomination for president. He had many years of political experience and had gained recognition as vice president. Many people thought he would win the national election easily, but he lost to the young John Kennedy. It was the closest presidential election since 1984. After losing to Kennedy, Nixon moved back to California. Then, in 1962, he tried to defeat Governor Edmund Pat Brown, a Democrat, and lost. In conceding defeat, Nixon gave a final press conference in which he told reporters,
"For 16 years, ever since the Hiss case, you've had a lot of fun. You've had an opportunity to attack me, and I think I've given as good as I've taken. I leave you gentlemen now, and you will now write it, you will interpret it, that's your right. But as I leave you, I want you to know, just think how much you're going to be missing. You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore."
Nixon's political career seemed to be over. He moved to New York City and worked as a lawyer. But he made it clear that he was not ruling out a return to public life at some point in the future. Many Republicans began to see Richard Nixon as the statesman they wanted in the White House. By then, President Johnson had decided not to run for re-election in 1968. His Democratic Party was divided. The Republicans believed they had a good chance to win the election.
Nixon campaigned hard against the Democratic candidate, Hubert Humphrey. Humphrey was vice president under Johnson and had to defend the president's unpopular policies on the Vietnam War. Some Americans thought that the war should be expanded. Many others demanded an immediate withdrawal. Both Humphrey and Nixon promised to work for peace in Vietnam. On Election Day, voters chose Nixon. He narrowly won the popular vote, but collected many more electoral votes than Humphrey. On the day after his victory, Richard Nixon spoke to a gathering of supporters. He told them that the great objective of his administration from the start would be to bring the American people together. Once in office, President Nixon proposed legislation to deal with problems at home. He called his proposals the New Federalism. One proposal was for revenue sharing. Under his plan, the federal government would share tax money with state and local governments. For 3 years, Congress objected. Then, in 1972, the revenue sharing plan was finally approved. Lawmakers also approved legislation for some of Nixon's other ideas. One changed the way American men were drafted into military service for the war. The new law said young men would now have their names chosen in a lottery system. Many people had criticized the earlier system, which they said chose too many poor people and racial minorities. These were the men who were fighting and dying in Vietnam. Congress also approved a change to the Constitution to decrease the voting age from 21 to 18. Supporters of the amendment said if people were old enough to fight and die in war, then they were old enough to vote. The amendment became law when three-fourths of the states approved it in 1971. On another issue, Nixon proposed to build a system to defend against missile attacks. He said it was needed to protect American missile bases. Congress approved the idea in 1969. Critics said it would only intensify the arms race with the Soviet Union. Nixon's first appointments to the nation's highest court also caused much debate. He named two conservative judges from the South, Clement Haynsworth and G. Harold Carswell. Lawmakers said Haynsworth had been unfair to blacks in his decisions and that Carswell was not prepared for the job. Congress rejected both nominations to the Supreme Court. President Nixon faced these disappointments and others, but he still had moments to celebrate during his first term. One came on July 20, 1969. On that day, he and millions of people around the world watched as two American astronauts became the first humans to land on the moon.
Hello, Neil and Buzz. I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House. I just can't tell you how proud we all are. Because of what you have done, the heavens have become a part of man's world. And as you talk to us from the Sea of Tranquility, it inspires us to redouble our efforts to bring peace and tranquility to Earth.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.